Hey, Breton, how's it going?
It's going well. Great to be here and chat with you, Brian.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being here. I'm really looking forward to this discussion. For anyone joining us, Breton Burkhofer is a principal at Prologis Ventures, a venture capital fund focused on the future of commerce and the built environment, and backed by Prologis, the largest owner of logistics real estate globally. Prior to Prologis, Breton spent time on the operating side in business development at Euclid Analytics, which is now a part of WeWork. Breton received a BA in economics from Stanford and his MBA from the Haas School at UC Berkeley, where he was a venture investment partner at the Dorm Room Fund. Breton, so excited to have you here and talk logistics, real estate, and global, which are all parts of the sort of Prologis ecosystem. Why don't we start with the supply chain? I'd love to just get your take on the potential impact to the supply chain that COVID-19 is having.
Yeah, sure. It's been a wild few weeks for the entire country, but particularly in the supply chain. I think we're in the early innings of a roller coaster. It started a few weeks ago with a couple months ago with a massive supply shock when Chinese production shut down, and a lot of goods just became unavailable. Container ships were empty. That just put a huge strain on shipping companies. And then the boat completely rocked back the other way in the last couple of weeks. Now we're entering a significant demand shock as the rest of the world is dealing with this health crisis and shutting down cities and businesses, asking the population to stay home. So, all of a sudden, China's at near full production and goods are ready to go, and the rest of the world is doesn't have the demand anymore to buy them. So I think it's an interesting time in that the depth and the length of that demand shock is still pretty unclear. But based on the unemployment numbers coming out, and when you look at the COVID infection curve, you can imagine that it's going to be many months at least. And I think what's interesting, just a little historical context, is technology has driven a ton of efficiency into the supply chain in recent years. And you see that in terms of lower inventory, reduced number of suppliers, just-in-time replenishment models, a lot of different practices that have taken a ton of cost out. So they've been great. But this crisis, that efficiency has led the supply chain to really break at the seams during this crisis. And so I think it's going to lead to a lot more balance between efficiency and resiliency. So, you look at a lot of big companies in the supply chain, whether on the retail side, the wholesale side, or 3PLs, and generally, there's just been a little bit of an underinvestment in technology relative to other sectors of the economy. That trend has already started to reverse as technology investments accelerate, but I think coming out of this crisis, you're going to see just a dramatic increase in the amount that the big operators are going to invest in technology to solve those deficiencies that have been exposed in recent months. So, we at Prologis Ventures are particularly bullish, but I think there's just going to be a ton of opportunity for vertical focused technology platforms to be built in commerce in the coming years.
That's super interesting. That's really cool. Let's spend a little bit of time actually on, some of the indicators or things that you're trying to watch in the supply chain. You talk about sort of China being ready, but the rest of the world not. Are there certain indicators you're looking for, whether it's macroeconomics, whether it's agreements and trade talks? Like, what are the things that you're looking for to say, okay, from here we should see some stability, we should see things turn back on and sort of get to business as usual within the supply chain in specific?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a variety of things that we watch pretty closely. From the very macro, like employment, unemployment, down to some kind of more micro levels. I mean, I think what's particularly interesting right now is just an absolute kind of shift in capacity within the supply chain from businesses that are turning off to businesses that are growing faster than they ever have and having their all-time peak months at a time of the year that's typically a pretty off-peak time. So I think we're we're paying really close attention to, consumer behavior, how consumers are buying, how buying behavior is changing. Obviously, this has been a pretty large tailwind for e-commerce across a number of different segments, grocery being, the most notable one. So we're paying a ton of attention there. I think we're looking a lot at kind of how new business models are emerging around, e-commerce and omni-channel. So things like buy online, pick up in store, are models that a variety of different, retailers have been testing. And I think you're going to see some dramatic growth there. So we're looking at, how businesses are responding to that, consumption behavior change with new models. And then I think we're also just looking at, the different within e-commerce and within omnichannel, what are the different growth rates of different segments? What does that mean for, what businesses are truly kind of essentials and what businesses are maybe not essentials, or are maybe more nice to haves. I think we always talk about in venture, a need to have versus a nice to have. I think this environment is really stress testing that theory more than ever before.
Absolutely. Let's shift a little bit to another topic that I know you spend time on, which is labor in the workforce. Obviously we're going to see shifts in, to your point, unemployment and employment, but any other shifts that you're keeping an eye on, whether it's workforce technology, whether it's collaboration software, anything in particular that you think is interesting right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the turmoil that the COVID crisis is causing the labor market, I think, is going to have some lasting effects. I think we're seeing a truly unprecedented kind of shift in the labor force out of some sectors and into other sectors. You have headlines on an almost daily basis, around, Walmart hiring, 150,000 people, and Amazon hiring 100,000 people, and Dollar General's hiring 50,000 people. It's just amazing to see that at the same time that, obviously, other operations are shuttering. And, the trends around acceleration of technology, making it more challenging for the workforce to adapt have already been around for a while. And all of a sudden, I think that the timeline is even more condensed right now. So we're really going to test society's ability to upskill, reskill talent, and deploy them into new roles in the economy. And I think what that's going to do is that's going to open up a ton of opportunity for better, talent management tools, for better technology to source talent through new channels, and source talent more cost effectively through existing channels, to better train talent quicker, with better results to, skill retention and productivity. Mm-hmm. And then, just around retention as well, I think the economics of retention have changed dramatically. And we see this particularly in the industrial workforce where, turnover rates are so high that all of a sudden it starts to make sense to invest more money in your people, even from a purely economic perspective, besides the fact that it's just the right thing to do. Putting that money in up front to make sure people have the right skills and are prepared and are valued and have a career path, pay dividends down the line. So you start to see some big companies like Amazon, doing things to making some big investments. They obviously have been really public about their $700 million investment in kind of workforce training. So I think, big companies need the technology platforms to make that happen.
Yeah, that's great. I want to talk a little bit about something that I think a lot about, which is, vertical threats or threats to vertical specific industries. Real estate in particular, we may come out of this and home buying may go down because people aren't employed and they just don't have the same liquidity. And so, as a response to that, does real estate tech and logistics tech and all the things that sort of get paid for out of budget of the real estate market doing well, do those things shutter as well? I'm curious kind of your thoughts on where those types of technology platforms will be after COVID-19 and how you think they survive in a potentially, down real estate market.
Yeah, no, it's a good question, and I think my group is definitely talking about this frequently and trying to do our best to kind of model out where things net out. There's going to be this interim period for sure where budgets completely dry up. Whether you're making an investment in a building or you're making an investment in supply chain assets. The big companies in the space are gonna struggle to be able to deploy new technologies generally because of the chaos. And then also there's gonna be a lot of pressure on margins, and there's gonna be a lot of bankruptcies, frankly, and in parts of commercial real estate and some parts of logistics. And so that's going to make it really difficult for any enterprise sale. I think companies are really going to have to weather a deep storm, and I think there's certainly going to be some carnage in terms of tech startups not making it through. But coming out the other end of it, I think again there's going to be an increasing amount of an investment in technologies that offer better resilience, automate workflows, that enable better talent management, et cetera. And so I think for those that are able to kind of weather the storm and survive, I think that there will be a bigger opportunity and perhaps a smaller number of competitors, addressing that opportunity. So the key really for companies in those spaces is to figure out, how can you manage through, how can you manage burn, how can you focus on existing customers and keep them happy, how can you maybe be, creative with how you deliver your products and flexible on how you price your product right now. To gain some share by serving some of the big operators that are desperate for help, are looking
Sounds
for a
great.
new solution to help them weather the storm.
Well, if you can get some combination of higher barriers to entry, less competitors, an increased willingness to spend, and a customer that really needs you, those sound like pretty good terms to be on for, to your point around some of these companies that might do pretty well on the other side of this.
Yeah, we're advising a lot of our portfolio companies to like really think creatively and offer a solution at a deep discount, maybe even offer it for free. If you can get some of the big enterprise names out there in the grocery space, you think about
Might be a shortened RFP.
exactly right. And hey, serve them now while they really need you. Do it at a deep discount, both because it's the right thing to do and because it's a great way to get in there. And coming out the other side of this, there's plenty of ways that you can monetize that relationship. But what you've done is you've built the relationship and helped them
Yeah.
out of a bind.
Yeah, that's great. Let's spend a little bit of time just on, the Prologis portfolio. I'd love to hear if you've seen anything inspiring or best practices, whether it's internal communications of how CEOs are communicating with their teams or external communications around how any teams are communicating with their customers. I'd love to just hear, anything that you're seeing in the portfolio that you thought was innovative or inspiring.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think, generally just, over communication, over transparency, having a high bar on empathy has been, the key that's really set the best leaders apart. We're thankful to get to work with a number of truly inspiring leaders across our portfolio companies. And so it's been really great to see. But I think some of the more inspiring, thoughtful things that we've seen have really been just related to, putting the desire to support, the big customers and generally just support society through this crisis ahead of, any more self-serving incentives. Yeah. And again, as we just talked about, like there's kind of dividends that that'll pay down the line, but, a lot of the companies in our portfolio have insights into the supply chain, have critical assets in the supply chain, have access to information that others don't, that have technology that can just much more efficiently, solve an issue than traditional methods. And so, who needs those more than, the frontline workers in the healthcare system and, the manufacturers that are trying to get masks to those healthcare workers as fast as possible and other equipment. And so we've been truly inspired by some of our portfolio companies, notably, Flexport has been raising a lot of money and leveraging their resources to, quickly and efficiently ship, much needed critical medical devices to the front lines. So I think that's been something that's been really inspiring is these companies have, some really unique advantages and have a unique opportunity to help in a way that others do. So it's been great to see them take advantage.
No, it's amazing. And Ryan's been doing a lot of really cool stuff even before all this.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's been cool. It's been really cool to see him get the chance to show what Flexport can do, because it's an incredible company.
Yeah.
Last one for you. I really appreciate you being here, man. This has been super fun. If you look out 6 to 12 months, any silver linings or things that you see that come out of what we're going through, whether it's, on the emotional side of being home and getting used to work from home, or whether it's certain companies that get built, any positives or perspective that you can put on where you think we come out on the other side?
Yeah, no, I think there are some positives that will come out. I mean, I think I've seen in my community and definitely, heard some of the things from some friends and family that a lot of people are really stepping up and filling the physical contact void with some, emotional contact and finding more creative ways to just, be there for each other. And I think that's been great to see. I hope a lot of that sticks. I think, by finding ways to be more empathetic and connected and supportive digitally, I think, that can hopefully, combat some of the challenges that, have been very publicly talked about in the news related to, the effect of social media on, isolation and loneliness. So I think that's been great to see. I hope these new digital behaviors can stick and really help us, connect more broadly in our community. I think, hopefully, just even broader than that, as a society and, looking at our government agencies as well, I hope, our lack of preparedness for this pandemic can teach a lesson in terms of
wake some people up.
I think there's institutions that we need to continue to invest in, and then, even at the community level, there's just some institutions and behaviors we need to continue to invest in. So, this is certainly not the last. It's hopefully the worst for our lifetime. But I hope we can have more resilience built into our institutions for sure.
I hear you, Bretton Burkhofer from Prologis Ventures. Thank you so much for being here, man. Always good to hear from you.
Absolutely, great chatting. Thanks, Brian.
Take care.
Stay safe.